we bring Eric DeHatchek in from the Globe and Mail, globesports.com. I may as well not waste my words on nobody. I may as well waste my words on you. Eric, the general managers have been restrained. They've used common sense. There doesn't appear to be a lot of craziness out there like we've seen in past free agent frenzies.
Well, you're talking about the dollars and the contracts for free agents, and I would agree with that. I mean, that was my assessment, my column today. I think that, reality has set in. Two things happen. One is it's a very modest free agent class. Most of the top players in the National Hockey League, teams go out of their way to resign them to contracts. I mean, that's just standard operating practice right now. So, Kane and Taves last year, as soon as they hit July 4th or 5th or whatever, they signed those contract extensions. Teams understand that you win with a certain core, and that in this day and age with the salary cap implications, that you have to, tweak around the edges of your roster, So you're either going to be a have or a have not. And, and I think the Flames are in the process of trying to re-sign Mark Giordano because now they can. The Los Angeles Kings are trying to re-sign Anže Kopitar because now they can. And these guys, impact players, difference makers, rarely hit the market. I mean, Ryan Suter and Zach Parise were a couple of exceptions. Zdeno Chara years and years ago. But if you look at the number of real impact players that hit free agency, it's really few and far between. There just haven't been that many over the years. And so an awful lot of teams have overpaid for an awful lot of mediocre players in this era, that has long-term consequences. Teams have to offer buyouts, they try to trade unpopular contracts. I mean, the way the business of the National Hockey League is being done is slowly changing and evolving. And just as a couple of years ago, the trading deadline went from like a seller's market to a buyer's market, that's kind of what we saw this year too. So, but I like the clip that you played off the top of TJ Oshie, because yeah, to me, of the teams, south of the border that we don't pay as much attention to, because, we talk about the Kessel trade, we talk about what Calgary and Edmonton have done lately. Those are big, NHL mm-hmm. stories, and certainly they're of greater interest to us because we're in Canada. But if you then just look at the teams operating below the border, what Washington has done in the last couple of days is interesting to me. I think TJ Oshie's a great player. And, why he became the scapegoat in St. Louis is beyond me, because I think that I know, because I've talked to him a lot over the years, he's got a great personality. I think the fact that he can score all those shootout goals is worth about 5 points a year to any team. And I think going there, along with a winning player like Justin Williams, just changes that dynamic a little bit more. And under Barry Trotz, I think they were able to forge an identity this year. And now Brian McClellan, the former Flame, played on the 89 Cup team, has gone out and I think made really good trades, or like one trade, one free agent acquisition at a fairly modest salary. And those two guys are going to help them get over the top. I look at that Eastern Conference right now, and there's a whole bunch of Tweedledees and Tweedledums, a lot of teams that look alike. I like the 10% improvement I see in Washington. I think that could be a difference maker when we're assessing what happened in the playoffs next year, and looking back. I like what Washington has done. I like what they have done more than what other Eastern Conference teams have done.
Well, there's somebody pointed out that the Metro Division's really gone through this arms race here in the last couple of weeks with Saad going to Columbus and Kessel going to Pittsburgh. But I want to ask you about Pittsburgh and Washington. Is there a similarity between the two from the standpoint that both have franchise players who are still in their prime, but I believe we can begin to attach that word, there's a window here. Malkin and Crosby have a window, Ovechkin has a window. Do you think those organizations are more motivated to do something?
Absolutely they are, yeah. And I would say even Pittsburgh more so than Washington, because, you're right. I mean, how long have we been waiting for, Pittsburgh to land a winger to play with Sidney Crosby? And that's, no disrespect to Chris Kunitz, no disrespect to Pascal Dupuis. I mean, these guys have functioned very, very well for a long period of time, playing on the top two lines in Pittsburgh. But these are not elite-level players, and if you take them out of the mix and you don't have them playing with the likes of Crosby, with the likes of Malkin, in the case of Kunitz, before he arrived there. He was playing with elite guys in Anaheim. They're good NHLers, but they're not more than that. But Phil Kessel is different. You know, like, he's got a skill set that is extraordinary. I mean, you know, sometimes the head and everything else don't exactly mesh. And, you know, you watched as well as I did that this year kind of, you know, went through the motions and loafed a lot and, you know, was clearly beaten down by just the atmosphere in Toronto, the losing in Toronto. But, you know, like, he didn't play to the end the way a lot of, you know, professionals do. So I think that kind of colored the perception of him even further. And I think it might have even depressed his value in the trade market. But I do think that Pittsburgh believes that, you know, taken out of that Toronto environment, put in a situation where he is sort of a secondary piece, because Crosby is always going to be the focal point. Malkin will always be the focal point. I think Fleury will always be the focal point. And if Letang is healthy, he will be too. So, you know, he is going to be a guy that can just go out and play. I often think about Pavel Bure. You know, like, when Pavel Bure was playing in non-traditional markets, you know, where he could just go out and play, when he had a coach that, you know, put up with the fact that you didn't see him on the, you know, on the defensive side of the ice very often, that's when you got the most out of him. And let's face it, in today's NHL, when scoring goals is so difficult, you know, you need a guy that can put the puck in the net. And Kessel has demonstrated over the last 5 years that he has the singular ability to do that. So I think that they will work with him. I think they will find a niche for him. And I think he will be a productive guy. Now, does that translate into winning? Well, you know, Pittsburgh this year seemed to get further and further away from that winning, you know, chemistry that... Sure. That they had a few years ago. And so it'll be interesting to see if they can reverse that and get back on track. You know, this should help on a skill level, but there will be a little bit of, what's the word that I'm looking for? Mike Johnson is going to have to work a little bit of psychological magic with Phil to really make this work.
Yeah, it's, you know, he comes in with whatever baggage he comes in with, but, you know, Jim Rutherford yesterday, you heard the line from Rutherford, right, that kind of excusing the lack of physical preparation, saying that Kessel's a hell, you know, he's healthy all the time. He plays, maybe players are too in shape, which I thought was an interesting tack to take.
Okay, well, I guess I get it on some level, because there are people that, you know, like, have 2% body fat, and I know of trainers in the past that have said, you know, eat a burger at McDonald's as we pass through the airport, because it will actually do you some good. But I don't know.
I hear you.
On what they've been telling me about Phil Kessel, because I never saw him when he was in that Pillsbury Doughboy shape, but I've talked to people who were, and he could probably use a little bit more time in the gym. I mean, if he spent as much time in the gym as you or I do, Rob, he'd be fine.
Yeah, good example. Great example. What are you expecting for the rest of the summer? Because it's been a fun couple of weeks. Yeah. There's been some signings, but as you say, a modest UFA class. There's been some horse trading. It's been interesting. Does this continue?
I think a lot of the moves have been done. I mean, you know, you will have to still sort of monitor what's going on in Toronto. I do believe, like a lot of people in the industry, that they are not actively trying to trade Dion Phaneuf right now. I think Mike Babcock went to them and said, look, hey, we were trying to get this guy in Detroit last year. I like him. He's a Westerner. I like what he brings to the table. So I want to work with him. I want him to play on my team. So, you know, suddenly, you know, all of the, you know, like, it was Kessel and Dion, you know, Dion and Kessel, and then suddenly it was just Kessel that they had to get rid of. So, and I think that has to do with the Mike Babcock intervention. So they'll try to move Tyler Bozak. They'll try to move Lupul. They'll try to make the best deal that they can for those guys. And if they can't make a good deal for them, you know, maybe they'll come back. Maybe they won't. But I do think that things are going to really slow down right now. I mean, you know, today was, you know, a semi-interesting second day. Yesterday, you know, was outstanding. I mean, it was just so much fun. I think that, you know, the change in the CBA, I know you guys have talked about this, you know, by having that sort of shopping window where teams can negotiate with players ahead of time, express an interest. I mean, that just makes so much sense for me. I mean, these are important decisions for the teams, but they are also important personal decisions. I mean, today Justin Williams did a conference call with reporters, and somebody asked him, and it was a great question. You know, how much of this is a professional consideration? How much of it is a personal consideration? And his answer was, well, it has to be both, and that is true.
Yeah.
You know, these people have to relocate their families. When you get to the age that he's at, or some of these other free agents, like Francois Beauchemin said the same thing. You know, like, he wants wanted a 3-year term. It wasn't the money, you know, the money wasn't the primary thing. A lot of these guys have made a lot of money. So, you know, it's crazy to sound, because for you and me, it would be like, you know, $500,000 here or there doesn't make a difference. Well, it would to us.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really to them. But they want their families to be happy. They want them to be secure. They don't want to be in a situation where they are changing teams every year. Even Jerome last year, when he went to Colorado, you know, he'd done the year in Pitt, you know, the time in Pittsburgh, he'd done the time in Boston. He didn't want to be a suitcase, you know, a year in Colorado, a year here. You know, he wanted 3 years. That's what Boschman wanted. That, you know, Williams wanted, security. And so I think that's what we're going to see. But most of the names are gone, you know, in terms of the players that have been on the trade watch. Those are all gone. The goaltending carousel, I think, has stopped spinning. And so I think we're going to, settle down right now, and I think it's going to be quiet, the odd move here or there, but it's going to be quiet until September, and, the handful of players that are lingering on free agency will all get signed at the last week of August. It'll be the Devin Setoguchi types, real buyer beware situations, and then we're playing again, and we'll see who made the right calls.
So many different directions we could go, but I want to kind of end on a positive, and with respect to the work you had to do earlier in the week as part of the selection committee for the Hockey Hall of Fame, I'll say it, you don't have to, but Marty St. Louis retires today. Sure bet Hall of Famer in my books. It is a great story, isn't it? Smallish guy, never drafted.
Yeah, you know what, Rob? We saw him from the beginning. So I think we have like a little bit greater allegiance and appreciation for what he did. I mean, I've told this story to millions of people, and nobody knows this. The trivia question I like to ask: who was the last player to sign a dollar in Canadian or contract in Canadian dollars? And it was Martin St. Louis, because when he came out of school, Nick Polanos signed him. He couldn't get work anywhere, so he went to Cleveland, signed an AHL deal. The Flames liked what they saw of him. They signed him to a minor league contract, put him in St. John, and then eventually he came to the National Hockey League. The contract that he was on was the very last one, because it started in the minors. It was a minor league contract originally that paid him in Canadian dollars, because of course all contracts subsequent to the CBA that came after that were factored in American dollars. So he came here. I'll never forget, Mark Miller, going into that into the fitness testing, putting Theo Fleury and Marty St. Louis, back against each other to see who was the smallest, and both of them are straining to stand on their tiptoes to win the competition. And from that modest beginning and being bought out by Calgary and going to Tampa to having the kind of career he did, admirable, absolutely admirable. A guy who made the most of his skill set, was incredibly determined, was always a pleasure to deal with. Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite people in the game. And, I don't even know if I'll still be on the committee when he becomes eligible, because I think I've only got 3 years left. But he had an amazing career.
Yeah, and never to be drafted. I mean, there's so many things. Never to be drafted, just to be the league's leading scorer at the age that he was. There's so much that he's... Do you have a sense, Eric, one way or the other, did he put his foot out maybe, or dip his toe into free agency yesterday? Is timing, today, is that related?
Well, I think so. Like, I think this was... if somebody had... I think the only way that people, a team would have been able to convince him to play again, because he really didn't have, he was a guy that played at a high level late into his 30s, and then it just kind of dipped last year. So if someone had come out and expressed a real interest in him, I think maybe he would have thought about it. But the honest to God truth is, I think that he realized it was time.
Yeah.
I think when the season ended, he knew it was time. So if someone had maybe come out of the woodwork and said, we really believe in you, we think you can, perhaps that would have convinced him to change his mind, but I don't believe so. I think he was ready for this.
Well, this kind of feels like the long goodbye, because it's the second time this week I have to thank you for everything you've contributed to the program this year. The hockey season now ends. You get a break from us, but as you know, and I've said to you on many occasions, so much respect for the work that you do. You're the best in the business, and I really enjoy the time you give us. It really helps the program. Enjoy your summer, pal, and I look forward to getting you back in the fall.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Rob. I appreciate it. And to all the people that listen to the show, thank you very much for doing that. And, as you say, September comes pretty quick.
It just never seems to end. Thanks, Eric.
Okay. Thanks, Rob.